up will be ripped, and it might not even be intentional, but it'll be ripped from 20, 30 yards out, and you just, as a goalie, you got to be in the right spot to give yourself enough time to backtrack and make sure you make that save, but you're kind of on a little higher alert when one of their better players has the ball.
Sure. So, Dan, what's going on with the loon?
What's going on with the loons? So our jazz historian at the radio station here, Paul Kivy, gifted me two tickets to a Loons game 2 weekends ago, and it just turned out that they were playing my hometown team, Chicago Fire. So, of course, I went fully kitted out in Chicago Fire gear and acted a fool for a full-on 2 hours and was one of the best games I've ever seen at Allianz Stadium because the Fire just destroyed the Loons 3-0, and some guy started cussing at me because my joy was just too much for them, and my friends didn't want to talk to me, and it was an altogether amazing night. It was so great. And Chris can chip in what he thinks is going on, but for me, I think the Loons are in a bit of a downslide. They lost their star striker to a season-ending injury. They sold their other star striker to a team in Spain, and they don't really have anyone to replace those two guys as they're heading into the playoffs. So the Loons have fallen from second in their conference to, I think, fourth or fifth now, and are a little bit on the struggle bus. What do you think, Chris?
Yeah, I think that game specifically, they were coming off a midweek game that went past 90 minutes and into extra time against Austin FC in the U.S. Open Cup and gave up a goal literally on almost the last kick of the game to get knocked out of the Open Cup, which is a separate tournament from the league. And I think that was emotionally and physically draining for the team. So they definitely... they didn't have a lot of their starters playing that game and at least a full 90. And so I think a letdown was expected. But I also agree, not just losing their star striker, Kelvin Yeboah, but losing Carlos Harvey, who's a defensive mid who's really upped his game this year. Those are big losses. And I think, after selling Tony Oluwaseyi, their star striker, to Spain, it's going to be very difficult to replace him or Kelvin Yeboah. I wouldn't say all hope is lost. They're actually the 3 seed, and they are guaranteed at a minimum the 4 seed. I think they will be the 4 seed because LAFC is behind them, and they have a couple games in hand. But, yeah, they have a nice respite here with Sporting Kansas City at home this weekend, and then their final game is at LA Galaxy, who have completely flip-flopped from last year and are sitting bottom of the table in the West. So hopefully it's a couple games where they can get their mojo back heading into the playoffs, but it's going to be a grind in the playoffs, as it always is. So, like I said, not all hope is lost, but certainly you need to find a bit of momentum here at the end of the season.
So, Dan, is this the reason they got rid of their star player? Is it like the Minnesota Twins? Is it budgetary, or why did they do such a thing?
Yeah, I think it was very much financial. Like, they got a good return for the player. He's a very good player. I think they got $8 million for him, which at MLS level is pretty high amount at these days. It's going to keep getting higher as the years go on. But, yeah, it was good business for the Loons financially, not good business for the Loons competitively, I would say.
So before we go, I have one little comment. I was criticized mainly by Heidi for using the word pummel, but Chris, I have not heard a cracker of a goal in a long time. A cracker of a shot.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. That must be your upbringing. That's got to be family history, cracker.
Well, that's kind of terminology in the football / soccer world. A cracker of a goal, a banger. I know also that can refer to many of the songs we play on KXE as bangers, but there's a T-shirt that the Loons sold 1 or 2 years ago. I want to say that said bangers only because one of their midfielders scored a goal from 40 yards out. I remember this game, 40 yards out, top corner. And when they interviewed him after the game, he said, "I score bangers only." So they made him do a T-shirt and. So a cracker of a goal, a banger.
It's beautiful.
I don't know, Dan, you can chime in if I'm forgetting any other ones. But
I kind of misrepresented the Chicago Fire's win over the Loons. We pummeled them. It was clearly a pummeling.
Yeah, that was very much. I will stand by that. It was very much a pummeling.
It was 17,000 sad faces. It was fantastic.
Also, too, want to give a quick shout-out to the Grand Rapids boys and girls team. They're making the trip down to the cities this weekend with no more games. They're going to the Loons game along with my daughter and my brother, so they're going to have a fun time. They're also going down to watch a McAllister girls game. One of our alums, Abby Berkey, plays for them. So the teams are going down there watching a McAllister game and then also going to the Loons game. So
that's so cool.
Sounds great, guys. Thanks for joining us.
So high school playoffs start next week, and then MLS, the Loons play, I think, in about 3 weeks, playoffs start.
All right. We'll keep you guys keep us posted. We'd love to talk to you again.
Thanks, Heidi. Thanks, John.
Yep. Thank you.
Good. Thank you, guys.
Bye-bye. That was a mix-up there of soccer talk in a good way. I don't mean that unintentional. Soccer talk and breakfast, and we are so glad that you are with us today. Coming up will be the sports page.
You're listening to 91.7 KAXC Grand Rapids and 90.5 KBXC Bagley Bemidji. We are Northern Community Radio, telling the stories of the people in the land of Northern Minnesota through music, news, cracker goals, conversation, and events. Operating translator K210DR in Brainerd at 89.9. Listen at KAXC.org or on your smart speaker. We need people like you to support this local media. Text the word donate to 218-326-1234. We thank you.
Weather for today, another hot and steamy October day. Partly sunny, highs 80 to 85 with east winds 5 to 15. Partly cloudy overnight with temperatures in the mid to upper 60s and breezy southeast winds up to 20. Tomorrow, Saturday, mostly sunny with highs in the mid to upper 80s and overnight in the mid 60s. Sunday is looking sunny as well. Chance of showers, highs 77 to 80 degrees. We have been collecting stories from folks about grocery stores all this week. We just heard from someone who said, I remember my mom sending me down to the... Remember my mom sending me down to the local store when I was 7 with 2 quarters, one for a loaf of bread and one for a pack of Winston cigarettes. The owner always gave me a little brown paper bag of penny candy. It's back in the day when kids were buying smokes for their folks. That's what I was doing. You'd get some money and you have to go down and... Or a note.
Yeah.
That said, you know, please... Let Heidi buy my smokes.
Let my daughter buy me cigarettes.
Something like that, yeah. It's a different world, man.
Mm.
Coming up, we're going to be bringing you the sports page, and we would like to thank Great Lakes Aquarium for their support. They celebrate 25 years of bringing aquatic life and learning to Duluth, Minnesota, with ocean and freshwater-focused exhibits for visitors of all ages. Hours and tickets at GLAquarium.org.
I turned to the sports page, and the Mets had blown it in the 13th inning. Papers can't make losing look like winning. I think the Phillies took it 5-4. There it was on the sports page. Only page that takes a firm position. Kind of like an honest politician, but kind you hardly find anymore. In fact, let's face it, the sports page is the only place to go when a fella wants to know the score.
It's time for another edition of the sports page. I'm John Bauer. Heidi Holton is across from me, and it looks like it's a duet this morning so far. Fred Friedman may be going to join us. Kyle's on vacation.
I think Megan's on vacation.
Megan's on vacation.
So, you know, we could ask for some, maybe we'll ask for some input as we go along, or maybe someone wants to call in and be our co-host.
Let's go back to the links now, Heidi. We got to start with the links. For those of you that don't understand what happened during the game, Fisha Collier got a ball stolen from her and taken in for a layup, and she got hurt. Now,
but let's talk about, I mean, we also, there were two technicals that the coach got earlier in the game too, where she was really flipping out.
Yeah. People are pretty whipped up. And I just want to say something. This is just me. And I wish maybe Scott Hall would chime in on this if he's listening. But on the play where Nafisha Collier got hurt, she, you know, this is just from a refereeing standpoint. I looked at it a lot.
Yep.
And still don't have an answer, but she legitimately got the ball stolen from her. There was no contact whatsoever. So she reached in and got the ball and controlled her dribble, and then, like, the legs got tangled up.
Right.
So I think, really, that is not a foul. I think that's coincidental contact. But that's where she got injured. And that's just where I'm going to leave it. I mean, it wasn't a violent act. It wasn't.
Right.
She wasn't being mean. She didn't dive at her legs. She, Collier got the ball stolen.
Yeah.
And their legs got intertwined and she got hurt.
I think, I mean, and this isn't a foul, like you said, but I think the level of aggression and
prior
the speed
to it too.
That they were both going is what caused that to happen. But it's that interesting thing that I do not understand really of like, basically you can knock into people all you want if you're on the offense.
Yeah.
But on defense, you can't. And so if you think about it, by the time that the legs were intertwined, Alyssa Thomas's was holding the basketball.
Oh, yeah.
So in some ways, they could have called Collier.
The other way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just because, which I'm not saying is right at all. And it was awful to see because Collier was screaming in pain and as she fell over. It might have been, I don't think it was a flop. You know,
it wasn't a flop.
We see a lot of flops, but she was actually quite in pain.
And Reeves' anger wasn't just about that play.
No, it wasn't.
About everything that's building up all year
and last year.
And Collier, who is the one of the best, is, you know, one of the, arguably one of the top two players in the league. I don't know if she shot a free throw.
She didn't. And that was one of the things Coach Reeves talked about was
that's what drive coaches
that
crazy.
She should have had five free throws is what she said. There were five times within the play that things were happening like that. I mean, it was a, it was crazy to watch. It was historic, right? To see this in the WNBA and see her, you know, being held back. It was Natisha Heidman was holding on to her. Two of the coaches who also got fined, you know, were pushing her back too. And then she got thrown out. And she was swearing at the fans because they were yelling at her. I mean, it was...
Even as she exited, she was swearing at the fans. So I don't condone what she did. And I think there's a lot of criticism of it. But that's what it is. And she was asked. She said, I'm myself. This is who I am.
Yeah.
But it wasn't a pretty sight.
No.
And she got suspended and they got pounded and pummeled in the last game. They really got it taken to them. They had an assistant coach who was the coach.
Yeah.
And they were discombobulated. They didn't have their star player. That shows you the value.
Well, they played
of a star
really
player.
Well.
Yeah, I know.
But for a while. But I mean, they played unlike they had played all season for, I would say, at least the first two before the halftime. I mean, I was seeing stuff in the Sunday night game where Kayla McBride, you know, someone would steal the ball from her, probably Alyssa, and she would run behind them and she just popped the ball out. I've never seen them do that ever. I know other teams have done that, but they were playing at a very high level but could not sustain it, and especially with everything going on out there. And so I was, of course, thinking about, because so I didn't, whether or not it's right, me personally, I think this has broken something open that is very cool about
Solidarity
about how strong Nafisha Collier is, how her teammates and the league are really behind her in this. I was listening to some commentary on it. I was watching a podcast with Billie Jean King about this, and she was saying every player in the league wants Cheryl Reeve as her coach because she was fighting for her for her team. And that everyone, of course, would want that. And she was also like, I don't condone it. I have two sides on this. I have the intellectual side of this wasn't right. But emotionally, I'm like, yeah, look at this. Look at what Coach Reeve is doing here. So,
Fred, you with us?
I'm here.
So we've been talking about the Lynx, and I want to know why all the theories and stuff, why women's basketball is allowed to be so physical. Why are you thinking this is happening, that they're letting them get away? Is it because they're women? I don't, you know, I'm just wondering why the physical play is so unusual and let go.
Just my opinion, hope not to offend anybody, because the commissioner's weaker than weaker than weaker than weak. If you do not have the support of the players and player leadership, right, and all you have is the support of some owners, some of whom are in it only for the bucks, it's not going to get anywhere. As all kinds of writers have pointed out, and by the way, all kinds of NBA players have pointed out, European and American, white and black, that the refereeing is nowhere near the standard that it is in the NBA. They pay those refs a fraction of what NBA gets, and they're just rolling in money. And they have an opportunity to increase the quality of officiating. I think there's something to the effect they don't want to be accused if they call too many fouls of, well, we're trying to protect women or softness or whatever. I don't see it. We see too many fouls that are non-calls whatsoever. And, of course, there's going to be negotiations this winter. The contract's over. And I look for WNBA leaders across the board, European and American, white and black, to say, things got to change. Things got to change if we're going to keep selling our product. That's what I think.
I have some questions for you guys on this, okay? Because I just don't know. But first of all, Nafisha Collier, whether this is true or not, had said in her press conference that some of the refs make more money than the players that are doing the WNBA, which is kind of crazy. But she also said they're using this WNBA time to get into the NBA. It's like the training stuff. And so it's another level of, she feels like the commissioner doesn't care. They're letting this just happen because these people have these aspirations or something. But what I'm curious about, because I don't watch the NBA, is the level of refereeing or the aggression that we've been seeing. What's the difference between it? Is there a male-female thing? Is it as physical as we saw in those games in the NBA, but we're okay with it because it's men? I just honestly don't know. I'm not trying
Fred, you can jump in, but I mean, men's professional basketball is physical. But I think, and obviously the refereeing is good. I just like to make a point that basketball is probably the hardest sport to referee or officiate of any. Yep. Any. I don't care what it is, because you got 10 bodies out there that are going at it. I can't answer your question, Heidi. I've given a lot of stuff. Fred, yeah. Are these referees, college referees, wanting to go to the NBA, or are these college referees just making some extra money in the offseason? Are there any of them reffing in the NBA?
Well, they all aspire to get into the NBA. There's no question about that. I did see the statement, the Collier second statement. I've looked twice about her allegation that some of these refs are making more than some of the players, and there's no evidence of that. WNBA referees' salary varies from $16,000 to $50,000, depending on their experience and the number of games they work. So to be a full-time WNBA ref and make $50,000, that's not enough.
No.
In the WNBA. For the product they have and the money that's coming in, that's not enough. Because we have big-time college referees. Now, they're not, we're making far, far more than that per year.
Well, it's their career. That's what they do. WNBA refs are not, that's not their career.
Right. That is not their job. It's not a situation where you're running in after you were the school principal all day.
Yeah.
Or selling insurance in Roanoke, Virginia, and jumping on a plane and going to Chicago, to ref a game. That's not it. Or women's volleyball, collegiate volleyball, which is notorious for having part-time refs.
Yeah. You're right, Fred. I'm just looking at some information about the salary structure of the WNBA. Yeah. So rookie scale, they start usually at about $72,000 in their first year. And by their fourth, maybe $100,000. And there's an annual salary cap for everyone of $214,000. There's some super max thing of $249,000. I had heard something, I don't know if you know this either, but there's something in their contracts too about what they do in the off season. Is that right? I mean, like whether they go in and Unrivaled or not, the new 3-on-3 team and stuff. Have you heard that?
Yeah, I know they've been talking about it.
Okay.
I don't know if that's true or not, what they put in there.
But Fred, refereeing is refereeing. When you're a ref, you just try and do the best you can, and it has gotten out of control in the WNBA. So they're going to have to do something about it.
Which means the easy part is knowing the rules, but you got to make immediate, quick judgments, instantaneous judgments, right? And by the way, you got to be in great shape to hustle to get to the wrong spot.
Yeah.
John, you've seen that your whole life.
Yeah.
That ref couldn't make the call if they're not where they need to be, right?
Yeah, I've had many conversations with the refs. Were you in position to make that call from 40 feet because you're trailing and you're slow?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Fred, before you join the conversation, I want to give you opportunity, too, to talk about Coach Reeve and what you saw and what you think.
Yeah, I definitely understand her blowing her stack. Her best player gets badly fouled. They're very aware because people are whispering in her ears, how could she go the entire game and not get a, go to the free throw line?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was obviously wrong. And every time you don't make a call, every time you don't call a foul, it encourages people to commit more fouls, right?
Yeah.
It just doesn't. So I understand she didn't help her team by doing that, that's for sure. I don't care about the money. I doubt she does either. I sure don't think the owners care about the money. But, yeah, I understand what she did, the situation she's in. And here's the bad part. They're favorites. They feel really good coming in, and they're seeing this all slip away, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah. But that's sports. That's what I hear.
It is sports.
And there's been some talk too. I was talking to John about this. You know, before I had been watching the league very much, it was always confusing to me when someone wouldn't get a call, and it was because they're on offense, you know, and they can just kind of barrel into people if they're trying to get the basket. They talked about maybe changing some of those things as well, as calling more offensive fouls as well.
They're going to be taking care of the ref situation. I certainly hope they are. But all we're talking about now is how physical basketball is, and for Collier to play whole game and not get a free throw, just it doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't.
And I'll tell you what, Phoenix, if New York thinks they've got this in the bag, yeah, they do not. Phoenix
no
is,
not New York they're I mean Las Vegas.
Phoenix is good.
Yeah,
they're
they
very
are.
Physical
yeah.
And they know how to play defense. They messed with the Lynx. They knew,
I know,
their offense.
Despite everything that's happened, it was pretty extraordinary for them to do what they did,
yep,
on the home court.
Hats off.
And then, you know, I mean, there was, it's the thing that's been following, I think Coach Ryu even said that, been following the Lynx all season. Yeah, they've been great. They've been the top, but they, each game has some real downtimes, and that,
yep,
that bit them for last weekend.
Okay, Fred, let's turn the page. No more Rocco. Who's coaching?
Yeah, who knows, huh?
Rocco Baldelli, Heidi, coach of the Twins, has been canned. And I don't disagree with it. I know this year has been tough, but let's go back 4 years. They haven't performed.
Well, 8 managers got fired. That's a lot.
Yeah.
So it's not like the Twins are going to be competitive for top managing talent because, frankly, their salary says we can't win.
Mm-hmm.
I got no problem with letting Baldelli go. He had his chances, but he's not the problem. The problem's ownership, no money, talent mis-evaluations, too many first-round draft choices that have not even come close to succeeding. So, yeah, let somebody else have a chance. But he's, as we all know, I mean, he's not the problem. And I don't care who comes in. You could bring in Connie Mack and Miller Huggins and Joe McCarthy and Casey Stengel and Tommy Lasorda and Joe Torre, and yeah, they're not going to turn them into winners.
But one thing that has always puzzled me, and I've talked about this all the time, is the Twins under Baldelli do not take chances. They don't move runners maybe in that 10th inning when there's someone at second, and they never steal. And then when they did the fire sale, then Baldelli comes out and say, hey, let's just start taking some chances. You watch these games with the Dodgers and the Yankees and the Cubs. They're stealing bases, man. They're being aggressive, and they're making other teams have to perform, you know, putting them in an awkward position. And I like the fact that the Twins, all of a sudden, after how many years Baldelli been here? 7? Are fine.
Eight.
Trying to steal bases, and they've been damn successful at it.
Very.
We have to do things a little bit differently. I don't know. They're talking about Torrey Hunter. He's coached one game in the, whatever it was, the World Series of whatever. But yeah, Nobody's going to come in and do it. So
no, that's just throwing names around. The other thing that's crazy about it is the president of everything for the Twins, Falvey, avoids criticism. He's got the unbelievable loyalty of the Pollad family. Nothing seems to ever stick against him, right? And, you know, like they call some presidents in history Teflon presidents, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like nothing sticks on him. And Plus, he's have a very unusual situation. He's one of only three people in the Major League Baseball that runs both the baseball side and the business side. And you have no trouble finding people that say it is not possible. There's not enough time in the week to do both jobs.
Yeah, and he said, I take full responsibility. Well, then he should be canned because he's done a horrible job.
In any world, why does the person that's making the calls, the mistakes, or the right thing on first-round draft choices or on salary decisions or on trade decisions, why are they involved in concessions and parking, right?
Yeah.
That makes no sense at all. None.
We just got a few more minutes. Let's talk a little bit about the Vikings. They're going to have to go to a local junior colleges to get an offensive line. And they may not win five games this year if people don't start getting healthy.
They're beat up. It's, you know, and it seems like the most consistent thing on KXE and pushing 40 years now is offensive line problems, right? We talk about it forever. And it's bad. I wouldn't be surprised if they lose to Cleveland at all.
Yeah. Well, you know, you got to give them a little credit. They did go out and spend like over $100 million, but injuries and performance, yeah, I don't know. Yeah. It's going to be it's a long season.
You cannot compare the Wilfs to the Pollads, right? Wilfs are generous. That they got going for them, and they're still not winning.
So let's talk one more thing. The Gophers football, they got this young freshman quarterback. He's been doing a pretty good job. Now, Saturday at 11 o'clock, he's going to go into a stadium that has 107,000 fans and a team that has allowed the opposing team to be in the red zone five times this year. They're playing Ohio State, the Gophers. And it could be ugly. But you never know. You never know. It's going to be ugly.
And they got crazy NIL money, right?
Yeah.
You know, down there. Oh, my gosh. It's going to be bad. But credit to him. Heidi, you don't follow them particularly, but they got this freshman quarterback. And he's from Arkansas. His name's Lindsey. And his grandpa is from played ball at Arkansas and played for the Vikings, by the way.
Yeah.
And his dad and his uncle not only played for Arkansas, the Razorbacks, but gave money year after year, as does Grandpa Jim. And they live in Fayetteville, which is a college town, right? This kid, Lindsey, and they didn't draft the son and grandson of people that write checks and play there.
Yeah.
So the family called Bud Grant, who Grandpa played for, they called his kid Mike, right? Who's been the coach at Eden Prairie, John, for like ever,
Yeah.
And Mike Grant, he called the Gophers, and they scooped them up. So far, so good.
Yeah, so far, so good for a freshman. Do we have trivia?
We do have trivia.
Fred, it's just the three of us. Well, Heidi can't participate.
No, I can't. And we're going to skip a couple of them because we've already given these answers. But the theme from Scott Hall, our senior correspondent this week, is somehow we'll manage success, failure, and firings of coaches and managers. They are used to being fired. Now they are merely dismissed. They used to be fired. Now they're dismissed. For example, the Twins fired Billy Martin after the 1969 season. This week, the Twins dismissed manager Rocco Baldelli, and the Giants dismissed Bob Melvin. Our first question was, you know, Cheryl Reeve. You guys know the answer to that one and her suspension. So following the 1964 World Series, the manager of the losing team was fired. The manager of the winning team quit. Who were they?
That's up to Fred. I have no idea.
Johnny Keene and Yogi Berra?
Exactly. Yeah.
What? Quickly, Fred, why?
Johnny Keene won the World Series. The Cardinals beat the Yankees in the World Series behind a fair to middling pitcher named Bob Gibson, who you and I wouldn't get in the box against. And the Yankees lost the World Series, hired him away, and the Yankees fired legends, too weak a word. The Yankees fired Yogi Berra.
Mm-hmm.
This player was a member of five NBA champion teams and later coached L.A. Sparks to two WNBA titles.
Oh, he played for the Lakers. Guard.
Was it Cooper? Michael Cooper?
It was.
Michael Cooper.
Lakers
good job.
Guard in the 80s. This teammate of Michael Cooper's on the Lakers was the head coach of the Timberwolves for two seasons, 2009 through 2011.
Kurt Rambis.
Yes. She led the University of Minnesota women's basketball team to the Final Four in 2004 and has the most wins of all Gopher women's basketball coaches.
Is that Whalen?
Nope.
No, it's not Whalen. It's
is it the person that went? They lost to Maryland?
Yes, that's who it is.
I'm not going to come up with the name, Heidi.
All right, PB is your initial.
Pam Borton.
Yep.
It's not Borton. It's not, yeah.
Maryland hired her away. I remember this.
What former Twins manager is eighth on the all-time list of managers with the most career ejections?
Gardenhire.
Yes. He was thrown out of games 84 times.
Fred, do some research. Wait, next week, how many Billy Martin was kicked out of? Or
Gardenhire.
Earl Weaver?
I've got the all-time
What is it?
Atlanta manager Bobby Cox, 162 ejections. So, you know, the one from Cheryl Reeve, no big deal there.
She's got a long time left to be said.
Yeah. Long way to go.
Yeah. Okay, next question. His team lost 340 games during his three-year tenure leading to the New York Mets.
Casey Stengel.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Casey Stengel, pearl of managerial wisdom. The secret to managing is keeping the five guys who hate your guts away from the five who are undecided. And our final game final question. In 2004, Susie McConnell Cereal was the WNBA Coach of the Year for what team? 2004.
Oh, 2004. No clues.
That's very hard.
Minnesota Lynx.
What?
Really?
Yes. There we go.
Great question, Scott. Great question.
That's it for today. Have a great weekend, Fred.
See
we'll check
Fred.
In next week.
You guys too. Take care.
Coming up, we've got local news with the Up North Report. We're going to talk more about events throughout northern Minnesota. We've got Katie Marshall joining us in the studio from the McCroskey Art Center. And thank you so much for joining us this morning, sending in your stories. We heard from Lisa, who's been listening into the sports page. She said, about professional sports salaries, the top men's professional sports salaries are obscene. It's in all caps. Where's the value? Our doctors, scientists, most innovators are nowhere close to that. And we all know women sports professionals make the tiniest fraction of their male counterparts.
Yep.
You got it out there, Lisa. Thanks for weighing in.
Speaking of salaries, Kirill Kaprizov of the Wild signed a 8-year, $136 million contract yesterday, day before.
Okay.
I want to thank North Holmes Children and Family Services, providing compassionate mental health services to children and families at home, school, and the community. More information at northholmes.org. And we also want to thank the Lake Country Journal, a magazine showcasing the beauty, landscape, and people of Lake Country.
For KAXE News, I'm Chelsea Perkins with the Up North Report. 10 new cases of measles have been confirmed in Minnesota since Monday, all in the Twin Cities metro area. The Minnesota Department of Health announced its findings Wednesday, noting that the new cases can all be tied to domestic or international travel and are among unvaccinated people. This brings the total number of cases confirmed in the state this year to 18. Health officials are urging families to make sure they are up to date on their immunizations, especially ahead of travel. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has confirmed more than 1,500 measles cases in the U.S. this year, the highest number since 1992. There have also been 3 confirmed deaths. The health department emphasizes that the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine is very effective, and decades of data also show that it is safe. Minnesota's state budget director says most state programs that rely on federal funding have enough money to mitigate the impact of a federal shutdown in the short term. The Minnesota Reformer reported on a news conference on Thursday addressing the shutdown. But Anna Mingi says that a prolonged shutdown lasting several weeks would have serious consequences for programs like SNAP and WIC, which use mostly federal dollars to provide food assistance to families in need. The federal shutdown began Wednesday, and there's no end in sight. Federal employees are facing furloughs, job reassignments, work without pay, and the threat of being fired. Mingi says food benefits look to be funded through the month of October, but money could run out if the shutdown extends into November. The federal government is expected to continue sending Social Security checks and making Medicaid and Medicare payments during the shutdown. The director of the Federal Office of Management and Budget, Russ Vogt, says the Trump administration is canceling funding for more than 220 Green New Deal projects in blue states, including in Minnesota. When diving into prison population data, men are often the focus. But researchers are gathering information on troubling statistics for women, with Minnesota cited in a new report. The Prison Policy Initiative says around the world, the number of imprisoned women has grown by almost 60% since 2000, with the U.S. factoring heavily in that number. Minnesota is below the national rate and most other states, but it still outpaces most of America's closest international allies. The Policy Initiative's Wanda Bertram says men are still incarcerated at higher rates, but recent declines show promise. She says it's a different situation for women right now.
The criminalization of essentially addiction, of mental illness, and of poverty has driven women's incarceration in a way that is distinct from what has happened for men.
She's referring to prosecutions of low-level offenses such as petty theft. Minnesota's incarceration rate for women is 53 inmates per 100,000 people. In 2021, the state adopted a law that places pregnant and postpartum inmates into alternative housing with their newborns for up to a year. Other research has noted forced separation is one of many harmful effects that prevent women from staying out of prison. Bertram says on the surface, overall incarceration numbers for women appear minor, but she says the recent trends suggest that elected officials can't overlook what's happening. A consistent lack of access to diversion programs is one roadblock, and she thinks states need to invest more in social safety nets.
You can invest in healthcare, you can invest in community services to keep people out of the criminal justice system.
The report also touches on racial disparities. For example, in Minnesota and neighboring states, Native American women are significantly overrepresented in prisons. Thanks to Minnesota News Connection for this story. An event at Minnesota North College Itasca will highlight banned books next week as part of Banned Books Week. The American Library Association and Amnesty International declared the week at, quote, a time when free speech and free expression seem more directly under fire than ever. The liberal arts faculty on the Itasca campus in Grand Rapids will host an open reading for faculty, students, and community members. Participants can share passages from books they cherish that have been banned, censored, or removed from libraries and school curriculums. The free event will take place at 7 p.m. Monday in the McMahon Student Center. That's it for the Up North Report from the KAXE News Desk. I'm Chelsea Perkins, telling the stories of Northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report on KAXE is made possible by Woodland Bank, providing customers with personal and business banking solutions, as well as offering Kasasa checking accounts. You can learn more online at woodland.bank.
It's 23 minutes before 9 o'clock. Katie Marshall is going to join us from the Macross Garrett Center, talk about what's going on the First Friday Frenzy. The weather, in case you're wondering, is pretty spectacular, but pretty odd. Highs 81 to 85 today. East winds 5 to 15 miles per hour. 60s tonight, but still breezy. Southeast winds at 20 miles per hour. Saturday, mostly sunny with highs in the mid to upper 80s. Breezy south winds 15 to 30 miles per hour. And then Sunday, mostly sunny. Chance of showers and a lot cooler. 77 to 80. I want to thank the Headwaters Unitarian Universalist Fellowship in Bemidji. Huff's congregation strives to build bridges with the community and welcomes all to seek truth, practice love, and celebrate life. More at uu.org. And we also want to thank Happy Dancing Turtle, a nonprofit organization dedicated to growing stewards through education programs and experiences. More information at happydancingturtle.org.
So much going on throughout northern Minnesota this weekend, including Bemidji Symphony Orchestra. They have the premiere of Sky Tinted Water tomorrow. It's at 7 o'clock at Bemidji High School Auditorium. The song celebrates the 50th anniversary of Voyageurs National Park. And there's also Oktoberfest in the city of Nevis from 3 to 8 o'clock. German food, music, games, and more. And comedian Rob Fairbanks, also known as the Res Reporter, will be performing at the New York Mills Regional Cultural Center at 7 p.m. tomorrow night. And now for Grand Rapids, I sort of like this First Friday Frenzy, sort of a... You said Frenzy, John. That's a good name.
When I see Katie every once a month, I think of Frenzy.
Yo. You mean she's your friend? She's your Frenzy?
Yeah, you're my Frenzy.
Okay.
Frenzy. It's a good alliteration. And it is a bit of a frenzy. There's a lot going on.
Yeah.
If you want to try to get to everything that's happening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Be a frenzy.
So Katie's executive director at Macross Arts Center and also on the Grand Rapids Arts board. And so let's talk first about what's happening throughout the town of Grand Rapids.
Sure. Yeah, we've got, well, I'm glad we've got some nice weather because there's a lot going on and I hope folks can get out and check it out. Starting off at the Rife Gallery, which is just north of downtown at the Rife Performing Arts Center. There is a reception for the show En Plein Air, which is a exhibition of works created by 16 different artists that are part of the group Itasca Plein Air Painters. And they've been painting outdoors over the last couple of years. It's organized by local painter Nelia Harper French. And so their works are all outdoor scenes from the area. You'll recognize a lot of familiar landscapes and vistas. And the artists will be up there. You can see the work in the gallery and visit with the artists. That is from 4 to 5:30 p.m. And the Rife Center will be providing some light refreshments. And then at Balsam Creek Decor down in the Central Square Mall, you can stop by and see Deb Buxengard, who runs the Balsam Creek Decor Mosaic Studio, is showcasing an exhibit called Backyard Bird Mosaics. She has a grant from the Arrowhead Regional Arts Council, and she's been working on a collection of bird mosaics, and those are displayed in the mall center court. And then you can also stop by her studio, which is just down the hall, to visit with Deb as well. Then at Bender's, they are welcoming Jatona Berg, who has the company Cookies on the Range. She creates custom cookies for her customers with any design or art you can imagine printed on a cookie. Plus, they taste delicious. So those are at Bender's. In Old Central School, True North Salon and Spa in Room 102 will be open and will have handmade items from ReThrift, which is a collection of upcycled items made from thrifted and vintage fabrics. Fire in the Village in Room 203 has a lot going on. They'll have printmaking activities and a video lounge where people can see short films about local climate land leaders. Plus, they're going to have a harvest raffle at 6 p.m., which I feel like somewhere I saw something about a meat raffle, but I think maybe it's wild rice and harvest items, but that's going to be at 6 p.m.
No, I actually, I'm looking at it. It says
there's meat too.
Gift baskets with meat.
There you go.
Yeah.
So, yes. Oh, I didn't want to get people's hopes up if that wasn't accurate, but thank you. Yes. So that's at 6 p.m. They're in room 203. Free Range Food Co-op in 209 is welcoming Lily Winter with her handmade jewelry using repurposed sterling silver trays, painted aluminum, and enamel work. And then the artists in residence up on the third floor include Doug Leon, Nelia Harper, and Maria Leyland. So you can stop by and visit with them about their latest works. There might be some other things going on in the school as well, but these are the ones that made it onto the flyer. So that is the limit of my knowledge. Then at Wings and Willows Art Gallery and Custom Framing, they are showcasing the photography of Carol Bowman. She is a photographer whose photos of nature and wildlife are available in a variety of products such as calendars, wall art, postcards, and a children's book about loons. That is very sweet. And then at the Evergreen, they're hosting Trisha from Larkspur and Vine, and she will be on site making custom magnets from pictures provided by customers. So bring your photos and she'll make you a magnet. Whew. So that's what's happening around. And then at McCrosty, we've got a couple of things going on. We've got a new exhibition opening called Unearthed. It's a two-person exhibition of sculpture by Alonso Sierralta and ink on paper by Lisa Loudon. And they are married artists from the Twin Cities, and they forage for sort of materials and inspiration together, and then they each create their own works. But they're sort of in conversation because the materials that inspire them both inspire their works, but their works are separate. They don't create them together. So that is on display in the McCrosty Gallery. And then we have a brand new exhibit that's going up as we speak in the Guinewin Gallery that's featuring Sam Soji Sampson. And we've had his work before, but this is kind of a different angle. He creates custom cornhole bags and boards. And so we're going to be displaying some of his designs. We've got a couple of boards set up. People can come and throw bags in the gallery, and you'll see a lot of his cornhole bag designs as well. So it's a really fun. His company's called Trickster Bag Company, and there's a lot of sort of cryptid. It's very appropriate for October. It's kind of a Halloween vibe. There's a lot of Sasquatch going on and some other things. So
you usually see creative designs on the board. You're talking the bags.
The bags
too.
And the boards. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So, yeah. Wow. So that'll be in the Guinewin Gallery. I think Sam will be there this evening as well. And we will have our artist talk at 6 p.m. with Sam. And then Nelia will come down from the Rife Gallery to speak at the MAC about the plein air group as well. So.
Huh.
Okay, breathe. We'll give you 5 seconds and you can tell us about the studio tour.
Yes. So after today, tomorrow, Saturday, October 4th, is our annual fall studio tour. And that takes place from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. And it's all across Itasca County. I should have the flyer in front of me, but there are 9 different stops and a number of different artists participating because many of the stops are hosting multiple artists. You can find the map on McCroskey's website, McCroskeyArtCenter.org. We also have physical copies in the gallery, but if you go online, you can find an interactive Google map, and then there will be signs out kind of directing the way too as you go. But there are a lot of different artists you can stop by and see. Some of them will be doing demonstrations. A lot of them will have, you know, examples of how they create their work on display, but it's a really fun opportunity to get behind the scenes and see how the art is made, and to get to visit with the artists. And there'll be a lot of, yeah, just fun conversations and a chance to see inside the artist studios.
That's great.
John,
that's,
would you ever do that?
Yeah, I was just thinking I should do that maybe next year.
Absolutely. People would love to see the collection.
So, Katie, before we let you go, I know you got stuff to do, but the question of the week, do you have any grocery store memories when you were a kid?
Wouldn't that be weird if someone said no, not?
Yeah, I didn't go in the grocery store.
But just like, you know, as a kid, what you liked.
I remember, I definitely remember the Piggly Wiggly from growing up and just kind of loving that was a thing. And I heard somebody talking about the little conveyor belt of the, and that I just remember that, you know, the little conveyor belt with the groceries going up. But I have a real fondness for the Red Owl grocery stores. There was one in Northfield where my mom grew up. And so when we go visit my grandma, sometimes we would go there. But I think that was when I was very small. But we still had a lot of little keepsakes from there. We had some Old Spice tins that were like Red Owl brand.
Oh, yeah.
And I liked owls. I still like owls, but I think it's been maybe inflated a little bit how much I like owls.
People are giving you gifts.
So I've always kind of had a connection to the Red Owl.
That's great.
That's what I was saying. I mean, they had creative stuff. You had Piggly Wiggly and Red Owl for names of grocery stores. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Yes. The pig. My dad always just called it the pig.
Well, thanks, Katie. Good luck today. You got a lot going on and studio tour tomorrow. And if you have anything to add to our what's happening this weekend, we heard from Trisha from Headwaters School for Music and the Arts. Earlier, they have their open mic and they also have an artist. We'll tell you more about that coming up, too. So text us at 218-326-1234. We'll see you later.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Up next is our album of the week. It's Nico Case.
Gray at 26, you didn't know. It's not what I chose to show you. It didn't match my bloodlust at the time. I never rhymed, too young or too old, angry or annoying. But now that I find myself young again, I've got too much hope for what I don't know. I'm a fool and I guess I've always been a Pollyanna, living on the frontage road, going half the speed. Left ourselves sick, harmonizing with the freeway. Trapped in this lenticular sea, yes, I'm your Pollyanna, Pollyanna, Pollyanna. But I swap out a bunch of clothes and leave. Only glad we've come so far, you and me. Let's do it all again. I'm a sorcerer's apprentice, your indentured ever-present. I'm a sorcerer's apprentice.
That's Nico Case. It is our album of the week, that ethereal, independent, or indie sort of sound that we've come to know and love from Nico. It's her eighth solo album. It's described as expansive and densely orchestrated, the first fully self-produced album that she has had. And they are, critics are saying that Case is cementing her place is one of rock's great lyricists. The first line in that one was about, I went gray at 26 or something.
Mm-hmm.
We heard the song there called, I think we heard, Oh Neglect. I think that's the one that I chose. Yep.
It's the morning show. Thanks for hanging in there today and listening up. Lots of stuff to come the rest of the day, Heidi, for sure.
Yeah, we've got Malachi Coons with Headwaters. He's also with us for the 10 o'clock show, Minnesota Mixtape. And then at 1 o'clock today, we are on the river. I'm trying to take a look for that. John, you've got the info too. We've got Andrew Dzingel today at 1 o'clock and the Johnson Family Conglomerate tonight at 7 o'clock. You're not going to want to miss.
Earlier when we were talking about grocery stores, someone talked about the IGA. Do you know what IGA stands for? I can look that up.
Independent Grocer Association.
Do you know that, or are you just throwing that out? That's beautiful
out.
If you're just throwing it out. Heidi, that's spectacular.
I come by, honestly, my grandpa, my great-grandpa owned a, my brother's still listening, I don't even know if he knows this, but owned a grocery store down in Ellendale, Minnesota. That was the family business, but they moved to the Twin Cities. I think times were tough in the Depression, and they ended up in Minneapolis, and my grandpa went on to be an accountant for grocery stores. And so it was a big deal.
The Independent Grocers Alliance founded in 1926 to bring family-owned local grocery stores together. Nice.
Now, John, I was telling you earlier that I watched a show last week that I really enjoyed. I think you would like. I would love to hear from others if you've seen it. It is on Apple, and it's Owen Wilson. It's called Stick, and it's a golf-based show. And I think you will love it. It's a little bit, if you can get your brain over that it's Ted Lasso for golf, because it kind of feels like a similar concept, but it, I suppose it is. It is also like Ted Lasso, is that is you walk away with just the best feeling.
And he's teaching a young kid how to golf and life and et cetera. And how old is this young man that snuck on the golf course?
17. Okay. Yeah. Right. So they've got to go on the amateur tour. To get him qualified stuff. So they're all piling in a RV.
No. Oh.
And it's going from campsite to campsite. And it really makes you, because I have never been someone, you know, so many folks do that kind of thing and you get to know the people in the RV parks and all that stuff. So there's also that element of it that's really fun and how they're all getting to know each other along the way. I mean, there's edge. I'm not saying it's all just good feeling and stuff, but it was so... I enjoyed it, and it'd be fun to hear what you think of it as well.
Sounds like Ted Lasso, Tin Cup, and Little Miss Sunshine all mixed in.
Kind of. That's a really apt description.
Thank you, Heidi.
You're welcome.
Appreciate that.
We just heard from Lisa from Gilbert. She said a grocery memory for her. When she was in first grade, our teacher, Miss Bjornstad, took four of us who were in a special accelerated reading group.
Whoa.
Wow, braggy, Lisa. I'm just kidding. They went to the Piggly Wiggly in East Grand Forks.
And read?
No. But then they made dinner for us. Miss Bjornstad did.
Oh.
I'm still friends with one of the people in the group. It was from... Wow. What a story. Thanks, Lisa. To be fair, I was also in the Special Accelerated Reading Group.
Oh, my gosh. So. As you turn your voice down a little bit.
I wonder, Lisa, if you were also in junior great books. Do you remember this? This was like an after-school program where you read sort of the classics, which I started in like first grade or something. I'd love to hear if anybody else was in that, because I really have never met that many people that did junior great books.
Did you review the junior great books when you were done, or just for your own pleasure and development?
No, it was a curriculum. Yeah.
Whoa. Wow.
And I have a couple. I found them at garage sales. It's almost like a Reader's Digest condensed books. Like it's sort of a textbook that has. So the one I remember was we read Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol was one of them. And you just read part, you know, the entire story. But I remembered from that for some reason. I this may not be true, but I swear I had the sense that, like, I'm too young for this. Like, this is not really what I'm interested in. And then I also just, like, never really read Charles Dickens again because I didn't really care for it for some reason. I'm sure I read it because you're supposed to, but, you know.
Well, I sat in the
waiting on I can't be the only person that was in junior grade books. I'm waiting on a text on this one. 218-326-1234.
Well, I was the first chair in the I Hate Math class.
Oh.
You bet. Right in the front.
You earned it, I'm sure.
I did. Oh, my gosh. I want to thank Klocko Brewing Company in Grand Rapids, making traditional old world styles of beers, as well as modern classics for 7 years now. Their tap room is open Monday through Saturday, noon to 8, and Sundays, noon to 6, klockobrewing.com. And also the Grand Rapids Farmers Market, open Wednesdays and tomorrow from 9 a.m. to 1 o'clock at the intersection of the Golf Course Road and Pacagama Avenue, offering EBT Double Match and many more programs, bringing produce to members of our community. grfarmersmarket.org.
Let's talk about a few things going on in the region, including the Iron Range Pasty Festival tomorrow. Mountain Iron Community Center from 4 to 7. There'll be pasties from all local ingredients. That means hand-grown rutabagas, plus live music and local farmers market vendors. Also, 18th Annual Great Pumpkin Festival, Saturday, October 4th, from 1 to 4 at Memorial Park in Brainerd. Enjoy games, crafts, and food. And, of course, that reminds me of Charlie Brown and the age-old trick-or-treating of the Peanuts gang.
Yeah.
I got a rock. Everybody else would get candy, and every time in Charlie Brown's pillowcase.
I got a rock.
Uh-huh. Poor Charlie Brown.
The Ed Center for the Arts in Big Fork hosts the Sketches of Minnesota Traveling Improv Comedy Tour, starting on October 11th, beginning at 5 o'clock. With a social hour and meal, followed by community conversation, members of Danger Boat Productions will create an unscripted comedy routine based on their conversations. The event is free, but you must register by October 5th at edcenterarts.org/events. Also, the Bagley Area Arts Collaborative is offering mixed media animal portraits on October 17th and 19th, and the history and harvesting of clay on October 22nd. Both held at 9 Central Street West in Bagley. More information and registration at bagleyarts.org or on Facebook.
And the 9th Annual Monarch Butterfly Festival is tomorrow at the Bemidji Veterans Home on Ann Street from 1 to 4. And Watermark Art Center in Bemidji welcomes textile artist Kristen Anderson tomorrow night from 5 to 7 o'clock. And also tomorrow night at the Headwater School of Music and the Arts, they have an opening reception for visual artist Diane Roholt, and that's from 5 to 6, and then the monthly open mic coffee house at 7, featured performer storyteller Leif Wallen, a lively, engaging evening in Bemidji. Now, John, we talked about the pet portrait. I wanted to just take a couple minutes for each of us to talk pets and how the week has been, because I have something to tell you about the world's best cat that I own.
Yeah.
Aiko?
Is it good or not?
No. She woke me up in the middle of the night with a mouse. A live mouse squeaking in her mouth. Squeak, squeak, squeak.
On you or just around you?
This is the second time this has happened now. So I was a little more aware of what the squeaking was, but you know how I love mice.
Yeah, I do. I know how you love mice.
And I have to just remind myself, this is in her little pea brain. It's like she's showing me she's bringing me.
Oh, it's great pride.
Yeah, right?
She wants you to acknowledge that with respect and
when it happened
pride.
Before, she actually did jump on the bed. And I heard the squeaking, and I thought she found one of the cat toys that, you know, you buy them and then you never see it again. It's gone within 10 minutes.
Oh, my God.
But it was a real mouse. So there's that. How about you? How are your
Henry's
guys?
Doing great. Our new dog's getting better and better with people all the time. He's learning how to have himself combed. So he's a little restless. He likes it, but he spins around.
Aww.
It just doesn't let me comb him. Speaking of butterflies, I'm still seeing monarchs.
Yes.
And lots of robins.
Yeah.
They're confused by the weather as we are.
Yeah, juncos are coming in too. We've got a lot of juncos at our house. A lot of fun to watch. So thanks so much for being with us today. This is 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji, 89.9 Brainerd, and on your smart speaker, People Powered Radio in northern Minnesota. Thank you so much for your support, especially as we made it through our first week without federal funding.
Yeah. It's also and it's also fun and very important to have two-way radio. So thanks to everybody that's shared their grocery store memories. It takes all of us down memory.